Hey, we are recording. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Behind Closed Doors with Hannifer Griffith. Today, I have a very special guest. I met her last year, early 2020, from a mutual friend. And ever since, I just felt like I knew her. She's very open. She's very authentic. She's always herself. She puts her best foot forward in anything that she does. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Eva Lauren Jean Charles. I am a high school special education teacher. I am the founder and CEO of Black on Black Education. And I'm like in the process of building out a life coaching. I don't even like that framework, but life coaching practice where I really just work with folks who are dealing with the same things that I am and like building community accountability to like being our best selves. So we'll see how that goes.
I like that. Ooh, what made you choose life coaching?
Because I just feel like I struggle through life. And I think that all of us struggle through life. And I think we like feel like it still is something that only one, like only us as individuals are dealing with. So I feel like I wanted to do something that one showed someone who maybe on Instagram, it looks like I'm so much better than you, or I have so many things going on, or that I'm taking care of myself better. But behind closed doors, there's a ton of like trauma that I'm dealing with, healing that I'm trying to do, like bad days, good days. So I just want to like be a part of the journey for someone and not have it be something like, oh, I get to give you an inspirational video and like now you're supposed to have it all right. Like having a partner through this crazy thing called life. So that was kind of my thought process around it, but it's still in the construction phase.
But I love that though. And that's really legit the reason why I made my podcast too, because I realized a lot of the things that we talk about not behind closed doors is like this facade. Like we put up this, oh, I'm doing great, I'm perfect, but what happens behind? You know, are you okay with what you see? Are you having the hard conversations? And that's why I love having people on my podcast. First it started off with me alone, but then I was like, this isn't really touching me how I wanted to touch me. So that's why I started bringing more people. And I was like, oh wow, we are all living the same life, quote unquote, in a different body, but we're all going through the same things. And why not have people talk about these things that we all share as human beings? Absolutely. You know? So yeah. When you do start, let me know, because you know I'm here to promote. So I will definitely, girl, I got you.
I love it.
So we're going to pull from one of my cards from We're Not Really Strangers. Just to, you know, a little icebreaker, I guess. You know how it goes. Okay, some of these things are like, okay. Do you think I was popular in school? Explain.
I think you were popular in school. Explain. Yeah. So you went to school in Trinidad, like high school.
Yeah.
In Trinidad. Mm-hmm. And just from knowing that like Trinidad's a small place, everyone kind of knows each other, I wouldn't say you were like popular over others, but you were in there, you were in the mix, you knew everybody. And just looking at your face, you're sweet, you're kind, like people are going to gravitate towards you. So I definitely think you were one of the people that people thought were dope because you're dope.
You know, that's, I would say, yeah, I wasn't like, oh yeah, I'm popular, I'm best, you know, I wasn't like that, but I definitely was a face that people would always come to. And I love that. I loved helping people who are younger than me, talking to people who are older than me. It was just like, I'm my mom's child through and through. That's what my mom used to do. So I think I just like did that, you know? So yeah, for me, I would say you are. Your personality is very alluring. Like it draws you in. When I met you with Danny, I was like, I gotta be your friend. Like you, yeah, I was like, I have to be your friend. I think I followed you right after that interview we did with Danny, because yes, your personality was just like, I want to know more. And you're so authentic with who you are. I was just like, yeah, I need to know who you are. So I definitely think you're like a popular person.
I'm dead. I would say I went to a small high school. So I definitely was someone that everyone knew, including teachers, administration, like everyone knew who I was. Mm-hmm. I was always like outspoken, say what I felt, did what I wanted to. And it's so funny how like from the outside, I know that people would say like, yes, Eva was a popular person. Mm-hmm. And then from the inside, I always felt like an outsider. I was one of very few people of color. I never had like a stable friend group. Like I was always someone who was like moving around, and like when I was in track, I hung out with them. When I was in school stuff, I hung out with them. Like when after school and going out and partying and stuff, I hung out with them. So I definitely would say that people would perceive me as a popular person. Mm-hmm. But I definitely always had those internal thoughts of like, no one actually really likes me.
But I'm here to tell you, people like you. People like you. And by people, I mean me, and I think that should be enough.
So, oh, listen, it is, girl. Yeah. It is.
Because you, I just really love your energy. Yeah, and I feel like though I met you before, so I definitely, yeah, you're loved. So you should know that.
Thank you. No, I definitely like want to reiterate that. I feel like in that conversation with Danny, it was just such an authentic conversation, and it was a conversation about activism,
which exactly.
is like, so mm-hmm. powerful and so important in both of our lives. And I think that like, when you, I mean, the reality is that right now, activism, unfortunately, is like anybody with a Twitter handle can be an activist now. So you can tell when someone's not authentic and is not really about this life, like about this work. And from the minute you started talking, I was like, no, like that's not her. So I definitely had that same feeling of like, nope, we're automatic friends. I think we're in the same place already. And the incredible thing about it, and I was thinking about it yesterday, we've never met in person.
So yeah.
you're another person in my life, like through the pandemic that I've met that like is authentic. I think you're dope. I tell people like, oh, my friend, doing this thing, follow her page. Like, and I've never met you in person. So I think that like, I just wanted to add that because I just think you're so dope. And I'm so hyped, like even get into this conversation.
Oh, me too. Ooh, talking about this conversation. So we're going to be talking about suicidal ideation, everything from shame to asking for help, knowing when to ask for help. And I love that you brought this topic to me because I had a lot of shame with my own suicidal ideation to the point where it took me 10 years to tell my mom that I actually wanted to kill myself when I was 13. And then I think I told you this, like when I told her, it was out of anger because I was in an argument with my brother and it just like slipped. And when it slipped, I was like, ooh, baby, what did you do? The conversation just went like dead silent. And I was like, okay, guys, have a nice day. And I hung up because I didn't know what to do after that, you know? So I'm so happy that you brought this conversation. Well, not so happy, but I am. Ooh, I don't even know the word to use.
Same.
Yeah, it's just like, it's important that this conversation is being had. And I'm very grateful that you brought it to my attention. So let's start with, I guess what led you to that point of suicidal ideation?
Yeah, I think it's really important to like, kind of get into the nitty gritty of like, suicidality is a spectrum. And it's something that we don't talk about in mainstream society. Like you might have had someone come to your school and tell you a story about how bullying caused their child to commit suicide, but you still feel very disconnected from those stories until one, you know someone or you have experienced it yourself. And so the spectrum is like, I've had thoughts, but they're passive. Then I have thoughts that are pervasive. Then I have like a plan, and then like I have an attempt and or success. And so for me, I have never gone past the passive, like somewhere in between the passive and pervasive thoughts. Mm-hmm. I've never gone past there, but I think that what made me want to have this conversation was one, I mean, exactly what we talked about a little earlier, like what people see on the outside, what people, know to be true about you is not always right. And what's actually going on in between someone's ears is very powerful and very scary. And it's important for them to feel like they can be their true selves regardless of what else they're trying to do in their life and share with people who they feel safe with, but even outside of the safety, live in societies and communities that make it okay to not be okay. Mm-hmm. And so like you put up a post in your close friends, which I'm so honored to be in, where you kind of talked about like, I've dealt with thoughts of like, I'm standing on the subway platform and like, do I jump? And yeah. When I tell you like, the amount of times that I have had that same exact thought, or like I'm waiting for the bus for another day that like I don't have the energy to even be moving, but I'm forcing myself to do it, where like it would take a split second to just like end this.
Yeah.
And you think about that, and then you just think about like what song you're listening to right after. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, how does this happen where we can have these really detrimental thoughts just swipe through our brains and have us live in a place and in a society that like allows you to just push that away because you have work or you have responsibilities or you have like things that you have to do. That's just so unfortunate. So I'm really excited to kind of get into the nitty gritty of it, because it's important for people to know that even those high power folks that you say, oh, I look up to them, they struggle. And like, we have to have a way of checking in and holistically being able to have a conversation about like, how do you feel, and have that be okay. So yeah, this is a tough one, but I think we're going to get through it.
I think so too. And as you said, so I did post that on my close friend's story, and it's so funny that, by funny, I mean ironic, as I posted that, I had three other people message me telling me they felt the same thing. And when I saw that, I was like, same thing in what you said, how can I go from us having that detrimental thought to then it just completely being wiped and distracted by everyday life. So to like elaborate on the post that I had, it's so very strange to say out loud. So I remember I was watching Demetrius Harmon. He had a interview, I can't remember who is with, and he was talking about how sometimes when he's driving, he just feels like just like swerving off the road. And as he said that, I was like, wow, I've definitely had those thoughts before, where it's just like, I'm driving and I'm just like, what if I just like, just skirt, you know? At first, before I heard him talk about it, I thought I was quote unquote crazy, because how dare I think with the life that I have that I can just swerve off the road, you know? But then when I heard him say it, I was like, oh, wow, this is something that everybody's going through. And then that night I felt it again. I was like, what if I just, you know, swerve, you know? And something just compelled me to post it. And I'm so glad that I did, because it really helped me see that I wasn't alone in that thought, and that people around me are going through it, and it helped me connect on a different level with those people. But yes, like, how do we go from just having that thought to just being okay the next moment? Yeah. Because as you said, it was just like a flip of a switch. I went from posting that to then listening to Clouded by Brett. And it was just like, I forgot about it.
Yeah.
You know? So how do you think that occurs?
Well, I think that like, overarchingly, our society has a really good way of telling you what should be important in your life. And unfortunately, mental health isn't one of them. Mm-hmm. So like how many followers you have is important. How many likes you get is important. How much money you can make is important. How much school can you go to is important. How much money can you make for the government is important. Mm-hmm. And none of those things include taking care of yourself. None of those things include prioritizing vacations. None of those things include prioritizing self, right? And so then we work in places that live into those norms. We have friends that live into those norms. We have family members that live into those norms. And then it just becomes so easy. I'm not supposed to be sad. I have food to eat. I have water. I have a house. I have a business. I'm successful. I can't be dealing with trauma that's still lingering. I can't, like, how could you be so ungrateful? Like, we have all these belief systems about, like, how could you even think about doing that to your family? How could you even, like, even some of the ways that people talk about suicide is so, like, the person who's dealing with it is the problem, or they're at fault, right? And so why didn't they ever tell anyone? Why didn't they ever come to you? And then you sit here and you really reflect on who you are. And it's like, have I been someone who was accessible to be tell this to? Have I been someone who's a good enough friend to be okay with telling this to? Have I been checking in on them about stuff that's not school and not work and not all of these things? So it really makes you question, one, how we are to people, because that's important. Like, it's really important to recognize like who I am and how I treat others. Am I the type of person that they would want to come and tell me what's going on in their life, to that deep level? But then on the other side, it's how many people in your life do you have that you don't feel comfortable saying that to? And you don't feel comfortable sharing these things to. So I think that it's just also who should want to commit suicide, who should want to be sad. That also makes it so that it's so easy to flip the switch, because I am not someone who should have suicidal ideation. I have too many resources. I have too much support. I have too many people around me. I have too much money. I have too many great things going on in my life to be dealing with suicide. And yet 2 weeks ago, I was on suicide watch in a hospital.
Mm.
So we have to, like, we really have to pick apart how we even think about these things and how we communicate and how we operate in our social relationships. There's just so much to it.
And the point that you said with how you're not a type of person that should be feeling suicidal ideation. I think it is important to also acknowledge that we're two Black women navigating this world. And as a Black woman, we're always taught that you got to be strong. You can take twice as much as everybody else. Like, if pizza is getting beat down, you can get twice as beat down and you can still stand up, you know? And it goes so deep into even what happened yesterday in Georgia with the representative who got arrested for just knocking on the door, because I can't remember his name, but like, he was signing a bill behind closed doors. Yep. Nobody was there. He didn't talk about it. He was just signing it for voter oppression. Yep. And the Black woman who, I think she was a representative, so I think she had like more power over him, was arrested because she is a woman and she's Black. So imagine the trauma that is occurring in that moment that we just saw. When I saw it, I was like, I wanted to cry, but I couldn't cry because I knew this is what we go through and we're expected to hold the weight on our shoulder and just let things happen to us. So I definitely resonated with that point because I feel the same way too. I should not be feeling like if I should have suicidal ideation. You know, I go to school. My dad helps me financially because, you know, I'm international and it's very hard. What else? I have the privilege of, you know, buying this mic for my podcast. You know, I have all these things. So I should not feel like I should commit suicide, should commit suicide. So that point, it definitely resonated with me. But if you feel comfortable talking about your, I don't want to call it journey, but I guess path to being under suicidal watch. How did that?
So just kind of like going a little bit back more is where we start, because my mom passed away in the beginning of December. So, and it was sudden. We still don't really have full answers as to what happened, so that is also very kind of like difficult to digest. It was literally a regular day. You get the call and now like your life has changed. And I knew the things that would come with that. I'm the oldest sibling of four. I have a difficult relationship with my maternal side of my family. And I am always perceived as the one who's strong. I'm always perceived as the one who's going to figure it out. So the day after we found out, well, you know, you're the oldest, you're going to have to get the arrangements together. You're going to have to financially burden this. You're going to have to do, do, do. And these are like verbatim what was being said to me. And I don't think that the people on the other end realized how much that was. We also heard that she passed away through word of mouth. There was not a hospital that called us. There was not a, and so I had to call the morgues to find her. And so fast forward, we have her arrangements, we cremate her, all of this happens. And then it's kind of months going by of just like not getting information from the funeral home and like trying to figure out when we could pick up her ashes. And all in all, they told us 2 weeks Thursday that they lost her ashes, that they couldn't find them. And when I first got the call, I went to work the rest of the day. I kind of just like went through the motions, and then Friday came and I went through the motions and I went to work and I'm like laying in my bed and I'm just like miserable. I'm just so upset and I can't get out of it. Mm-hmm. And I hung out with my friend and I felt a little bit better and then came home. And that Saturday, I really just sat in bed all day, ate food, didn't do anything, drank a bottle of wine by myself. And I'm laying in bed and I'm just like, I don't think I am strong enough to handle this. Like, I don't think I'm strong enough to have all of the things that have happened to me in my life, which we will get into as we can, because the trauma has not stopped. Like, yeah, from the beginning, the trauma that I have experienced in my life has not stopped. So although great things happen in my life, I very often don't sit with them because I'm still so entrenched in the past and things that have happened and how they are affecting my future and how they're affecting my ability to even see myself as worthy of some of the good things that have happened in my life. And so I just was in the gutter and I had locked myself out of my house. So my aunt had to come let me in, and my dad, one of my best friends in the world, is such a great support system, but I use jokes. Like, I use jokes as my way to get through things. And so I'm like, I must have a curse. Like, there must be a hex on me. Like, I don't know why is this my life? Mm. And like, I just want you to stop saying these things. I want you to stop talking like that. And I'm like, and I broke down. I'm like, I'm just trying not to hurt myself. Like, do you understand that? Like, I am just trying to be okay. And I think that he, again, still sees me as this person who's strong and who overcomes and who gets it. Mm-hmm. So even when he, like, I told him, and that is not something that I really have shared with anyone. And I told him, and even the other side of the conversation was like, okay, well, just relax, be okay, lay down. And there wasn't an imminent fear around hearing your child say that they're just trying not to hurt yourself. So I feel like even in that moment, I was crying out for help and I felt like I wasn't heard. And so the rest of the day, I kind of just tried to get through it, tried to walk, had to just be normal. And I went to work on Monday, and I have a very tumultuous relationship with my job. And so I'm really just like struggling to get through days. And I had therapy that afternoon, Monday night. And I told her, I was like, I just don't think I'm strong enough to do this. I don't want to be anybody's sister, anybody's friend, anybody's anything. Like, I just don't have the energy to care for anyone. I don't even have the energy to care for myself. Like, I just want to go to sleep. Like, I'm tired. And with her having worked with her for months now, and her, like, us have a really good relationship. I love my therapist. I think that she really said, like, I'm scared for you, and I'm not going to go to bed well with the way that you are right now. And I was afraid to go home. I was at my grandma's house, but I was afraid to go home, not because I thought I was going to do something, but I was afraid to be alone with my thoughts. Mm-hmm. I was afraid to just like sit in my house by myself in my apartment and like just be in the headspace that I was in. And she was like, if you're afraid to be home alone, if you're saying things like you want to go to sleep, if you're saying things like you don't care or want to be around the people who are supposed to make you happy, like, there's something bigger that's wrong. And I think that you need more help than seeing me once a week right now. Mm-hmm. And so my dad drove me to the hospital. I checked myself in and I stayed for 3 days, and it wasn't a pleasant experience by any means. There are some extremely sick people there, and it was definitely hard to kind of find my footing of like, where do I position myself in this place, in this institution that's for this thing? And so I'm on antidepressants for the first time in a really long time, which is a very weird feeling even inside your body. Mm-hmm. But I think that, like, and to give a moral to the story, they did find the ashes. We do have them now.
Oh God.
That really just took such a huge weight off of me. Mm-hmm. We found out last week that we had them. My sister went immediately to go pick them up. And so we're so grateful to have her, because I mean, my mom was also a very transient person. I hadn't seen her in months before she passed away. Mm-hmm. I hadn't talked to her in probably a couple of weeks, before she passed away. And so we don't have like something that's hers. We don't have a necklace, a bracelet, a ring. We just don't have that stuff. And I'm so happy to have her ashes now. And I think that not having them, or the thought of never having them, put so much weight on me to like have nothing of hers. And there's still so much guilt that I have about things that I could have done and said. in our relationship, and I'm still getting over that, and having had been those 3 months where you're finally starting to get back into a day-to-day where I'm not crying every day in the shower, and I can look at pictures of her in my apartment and like not immediately feel depressed. And for this to kind of come just clobbering down, I think it was just too much. And I don't think I was truthfully grieving. I was living, I was just moving, I was just going, I was trying to just continue to be a person. And I'm just happy. Like, I'm just really, really happy that I decided to check myself in, not because it was a walk in the park and it was fun, but because I made a decision to like not go to work for 3 days. And I made a decision to not put any and everybody else's needs above mine. And I was able to disengage from my computer and disengage from my phone and color a picture and read a book and like breathe. And so I'm grateful for that. And it was definitely a traumatic experience, kind of getting that low and watching yourself get that low. But it was important for me to verbalize it, because usually I wouldn't have verbalized it. And so I'm thankful for how close the relationship between me and my therapist got to be able to verbalize how I was truly and authentically feeling, because it wasn't the first time I had felt that while being in therapy, but I never felt comfortable enough or in a place where I was ready for that level of help. To be able to verbalize like, this is where I'm at and I need help. And so I'm grateful to be on like the uptick now. I feel so much better. My body is getting used to the medicine, the medication, not something that I want to be on forever, but using it to kind of get over the hump. And I'm just kind of getting back to feeling good, and that feels great.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing your story with me. And I'm so sorry all that had to happen. I don't like using the word sorry, because I feel as though it doesn't like provide the level of comfort I wanted to provide in this moment. But just know I feel everything that you said, and I'm so happy that you're on the uptick now. I'm so happy that you're here right now, and that you had the and it's courage too, if you think about it, the courage to like tell your therapist like, hey, I'm not okay in this moment. And also to tell your dad too, because I know how it is to want to hold everything and live up to that expectation of being strong. Because as you said, I'm the same way in my family too. My mom, when I got into my school this past week, she was like, oh, Hannah, I talked to your cousins, and they were like, oh yeah, I'm not worried for Hannah. She always figured things out. You know, she always gets things done. She's a strong person. And then when she said that to me, I was like, oh, that's a nice compliment. But when I thought about it, I was like, that's not really a nice compliment, to be honest with you, because you're just kind of overlooking the pain that we're going through and just expecting us to take and find a solution. And that in itself is very detrimental on top of being Black woman, you know? So it's just like those two things coupled together within our identity is very detrimental to us. And also it doesn't help us to understand when to ask for help, because if you're placing this narrative on us to be always finding solutions out, to always be doing these certain things, how can we know when to ask for help? So you knowing clearly when to ask for help, that's a huge thing.
Yeah. And I'm starting to finally like identify. I feel like my whole life, it's always been like, I feel okay. I feel like shit. And like, I've never really been able to like understand how that progression would happen. And I'm just now getting to a place where like, I'm stuck, like when it becomes super, super hard for me to wake up in the morning, I'm like, wait, what's going on here? Or like when I have 4 days, like, cause the days leading up to kind of being hospitalized, I was working 15 hour work days. Cause like I get up in the morning, I take care of myself in the morning, I do my self-care routine, and then I shower, I get ready, I eat, and then I work all day. And then I take like a short break, walk my dog, come back. And then I have Black and Black education after that. So I was working from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., 12 p.m. every single day. And so I was not allowing time to watch TV. I didn't give myself time to binge reality like television and like not care about it. I wasn't giving myself any time to like down, like come down from a really busy day. I was just like work. Okay, go to sleep. And I realized that one, that was affecting my sleep. And then two, it was affecting my ability to kind of like usually I journal before bed so I can like put it out. But it was like, I'm getting into bed at 12, 1 a.m. I'm like, I don't feel like journaling. Like, I'm just going to lay down. So I'm starting to understand that like, no, as much as I want Black on Black education to grow as fast as possible, I cannot take 6 meetings in a row after work. Like, I just can't do that. I can't do a podcast taping and then be on Clubhouse and talk about education and then do an IG live and then prepare for a webinar. Like, I can't do that. I can't be everything for everyone all of the time. Mm-hmm. And so I have to start to space out what I'm doing. I have to start to like set reminders to call my siblings when I feel like I'm in an emotional place to talk to them. I need to plan in advance when I want to hang out with them so that when they call and ask me, oh, can I come over? Nope, not this time, but we already have a plan for this time. Like, mm-hmm. I need to start setting up those systems in my life more often, because then it's easier to stay okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't need to be incredible every single day, but when I'm okay often and then I have a really awesome thing happen, I can go into that incredible day. Whereas when I'm like down here, like really trying to just get through the day, by the time something good happens, it's like, oh, well, I got 15 more things on the damn to-do list. So woo, yep. And on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. I really have to start to just pace myself through life, because I'm 23 and I'm like, I'm going to be on Forbes 30 under 30. So I need to figure it out. Like, mm-hmm. You ain't got time to rest. And as much as I'm still going to be on Forbes 30 under 30, period.
Yeah, you will.
I have to make sure that I'm pacing myself there, because I don't mm-hmm. want to be 30 and look like
50.
What happened to her?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Like, yeah, as much as melanin works, listen,
mm-hmm. we gotta protect
your stressed out grandma and your grandma who was giving herself joy and love and loving on herself and having her cute little wig nights with her friends. Like, we see the difference between the grandmas and what they looking like. Mm-hmm. So I really do have to just stop telling myself that I need to be perfect and that I need that there is some sort of deadline. But mm-hmm. I think that my life has shown me that if you don't do as much as you can right now, you might not have
then. To do it.
Mm-hmm. You know? So I think that I have to start to say that like my life is different than the lives that I've seen, and I can't continue to live as though tomorrow is my last day, because as much as people say that, when you have big dreams like both of us do and you mm-hmm. have incredible lives that you want to touch, it's a process and you have to love the process. There's mm-hmm. you and I will never have an end goal where we achieve. That's just not who we are.
Yeah.
We have to start to love the process. And I think that I'm just now realizing that like what I want to do, I'm never going to be able to be like, there it is. Mm-hmm. You can't look at it. Right. Kobe Bryant can look at it. He can see stats, numbers, all, like he can see it. Well, could.
Yeah.
R.I.P. Kobe.
Jesus. R.I.P. Yeah.
It was a rough week. We have to understand that there's a big difference between Jeff Bezos, who wanted to create Amazon, and now he can see Amazon mm-hmm. as a thing that is tangible. We want to change people's lives. We want to make people feel good inside and outside and look in the mirror and feel good. That is not something that happens overnight. It's not for some people, it's not things that happen in a lifetime. But when you start to see smiles on people's faces that you saw them frowning, like my students coming into class was like, all right, what we got to do today? And now we're in March where they're finally like, hey, Miss Jean Charles, like some days they want to cuss me out, but hey, Miss Jean, like you starting to see just the, I like learning a little bit more, or I like being here a little bit more. So we have to love the process. I think I'm babbling, but we have to love the process.
Oh, you're definitely not babbling. Definitely not. Definitely not. Definitely not. There's one thing that you said before, and I think I really would love to touch on it more. So you were saying, I can't remember in what context, but you said worthy of good things in life. Mm. And I really want to touch on that because for me, so a little backstory, I think I said this in other episodes too, but you know, I had some family problems when I was younger, and from like 13 to, I want to say like before I came to the States for school, I was a person who was like, I'm not worthy of anything good. you know, what I'm going through right now, this is all I am, and anything else, I'm not waiting for it. So when I did get into school to come to the States, I wasn't going to come. Because I was thinking to myself, I'm not worthy of anything good. That thought is still here with me. It's very hard to like shake that, especially when, as you said, trauma is a thing that continuously follows us. No matter how many times I go back to my younger self and try to give her comfort, I still feel sometimes, maybe not the same level of pain, but I still feel the pain of that residual trauma that I've been through. And it's very hard to allow myself to open up my heart to good things when I know that sometimes those good things continue to bad things or remind me of the bad things that I had. So how did you kind of like go over that hump of, I know right now, or I'm in the process of allowing myself to be worthy of the good things that are coming despite of what has happened?
No, I mean, I'm not there. Like, I have to be so honest, I'm not. I think like, it's something that you have to fake until you make, right? So I have to say it and put it out there and let the universe hear me say it. So I begin to really truly believe it. And I don't know what that will look like. And I don't know what that will feel like because I've never felt it, right? And so like for me to give kind of backstory as well, like my mom had a substance abuse issue my entire life, right? So the part of her life where she didn't, I don't remember it. So I hear that from my family all the time. Well, oh, when you were a baby and when you were this. Well, unfortunately, we don't start to remember things until we're three. So I don't remember that. I don't remember those times that were, and I definitely like throughout my life, we had times that were good, but it was just never something that was consistent and constant. And so like, I remember kind of moving to new places often. I went to 7 different schools in 7 years. Wow. From kindergarten to 7th grade, I switched schools every single year, which is why like becoming popular was just like a thing that I needed to do because I was an extrovert. I would always push myself. I wanted to be friendly. I wanted people to be my friends. And I always had to learn how to be friends in different places. So like, it was like, oh, I got into a really good school and I would have really awesome friends and things were really great. And then my mom relapsed and it was, okay, now you have to move and now you have to do this and now you have to do that. Or it was like, oh, like Evo, like I want to go to this friend's house and do this thing, but you have to stay home and like help your siblings with their homework and then you can do that. Or like, oh, Eva's doing really good in class and class is going well, but your younger sister is like having a rough time in class. Can you go to her, leave your class and go to her class and comfort her? And wow. So I just, there's so many times in my life where it's been like, things are going great. Here's a wrench, here's another one. Mm-hmm. And so it felt like that my entire life, where no matter when I was starting to find comfort, when I was starting to find happiness, when I was starting to settle into something, there was always something else coming from outside. And then there's a question of, am I attracting this? Like, is there something that I'm doing in my head to attract these sorts of things? Is there behaviors I'm exhibiting that continue to attract like the stuff happening to me? And so it really is like, to answer your question, is I haven't gotten there because I feel like even down to 2 weeks ago, you are finding this. And I'm trying to continue to fake it, continue to say the things like I matter and I deserve happiness. And particularly as someone who has decided that my life is going to be dedicated to being in service of people, that has to be the biggest joy in life. And I have to be able to find joy from it. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very self-critical person. I'm a very, like, how can I be better, grow by any means necessary? And it damages relationships. Like it damages, like with my partner, I'm like, okay, we're good. Like things are good now, but like, what should we be doing? What questions can we ask each other? How do we like, and it's just in everything, I'm always like, I'm not good enough here. Like this isn't good enough. And so I want to read the next self-help book to like get here, or I want to read or listen to this podcast, or like, there's just, I'm always, always, always like, what can I do? And I think that there's nothing wrong with that. If you believe that where you was enough and now you want to upgrade that. There was nothing wrong with the last iPhone, but they could add features to the new iPhone to make it something that's more desirable to people. Mm-hmm. That's how we have to begin to think about ourselves as humans. There was nothing wrong with the old iPhone that you had. It did everything that you needed it to do, but but you can add upgrades to yourself to get to this extra, this additional place. And I think that once I can be there and sit with that, and I can be an iPhone, like I will feel a lot better about myself. Mm-hmm. Because I will understand that I'm good enough the way I am right now. And then I will just add things to myself and upgrade myself in different ways that will allow me to just live life more deeply, live life more fully. Like I make okay money. I want to make way more money, not because I want to buy a Bentley, but because I want to go on more vacations and I want to meet more people and I want to be in more service of others. So I just have to begin to think about it that way, so that I can pull myself out of this, because it's really easy for successful people to begin to think about suicide when you can only focus on what you are not yet.
Yes.
It's so easy to be like, I'm never going to get there. And you feel so like drained by just consistently believing that I'm never going to get there. I'm never going to be good enough to do the thing that I want to do. And so why should I even continue to live life? Why should I even continue to be here if there's no possibility of getting there? And that's how those pervasive thoughts turn into a plan, which turn into success or an attempt, because you push yourself so hard and then don't see the results immediately and are ready to give up. And I don't ever want to give up, but I also don't want to be in pain the whole time that I'm hoping not to give up. So there's just a lot of inner self-work that has to happen there.
Mm. And that point about pervasive thoughts, I definitely want to go into that some more too. Everything that you said, there was something that you said too. Oh, the iPhone analogy. I loved how you put it in that regard, because yeah, there's nothing, as I'm thinking about it, I was like, there's nothing wrong with the iPhone 7 Plus that I have. It's just that they realize that, exactly, they realize that as society changes, there's things that need to accommodate for those changes as well. And I think a lot of the things that they were like pushing for was like camera quality. So even though the phone itself was providing the necessities that we wanted, because now everybody's into taking pictures, they're like, oh, let's upgrade this part of the phone to allow people to take more pictures. And as you said that, I was like, oh, wow. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with 17-year-old Hannah for 70-year-old Eva. It's just that as life progressed, we needed to add a few more upgrades to help us in that moment. And when you said that, I was like, wow, that is so damn right. There's nothing wrong with us. It's just that as we step into new spaces, have new dreams, have new purposes, we need to, quote unquote, level up. Hi, Sierra, if you ever listen to this, you know, we need to level up, you know? And it's not that nothing's wrong with us. It's just that the old us isn't going to fit into what's going to come. You know, and I think that's what we need to, especially myself, I need to start thinking about it that way, because I think, and it goes into my pervasive thoughts too. When I was having my suicidal ideation, it was that coupled with there's no way out. Mm. So I remember, this day, I haven't thought about this day in a very long time, but I remember, this is like when BlackBerry was a thing. So I was like, what do you call like BBMing someone?
Yes.
Like, this is it. This is the time that I just want to end things. So my mom left. Like she went out to the grocery or something. My brothers at that time, one, he moved up to New York. The one who lives in the Bronx, he left home. So he was in the States. My other brother was like out and about, and I was home alone. And I was like, I was just in that thought. I was like, there's no way out of this moment right now. There's nothing that's gonna get better. Everything just seemed as though it wasn't working for me. So the thoughts were like, Hannifer, there's nothing, you can't get us to this dark place. There's nothing that's ever going to happen. And my pervasive thoughts turned into a plan. And I was going to like take a knife and like slash my wrist. And if my mom hadn't come the time that she came, I really don't think it would have like ended properly or ended with me being here. So it's just when you said, yeah, it's really those pervasive thoughts that get us. And thinking back at it right now and thinking about the situation as I'm out of that situation, there was a way out. I just wasn't able to see it because the thoughts were just like coming at me all at once. And the thoughts were painting a reality that just was not there. Because when I started thinking about my mental health and realizing that I wasn't alone, I was like, oh, wow, there's people who I can reach out to. But the thoughts, once again, was painting a reality of, Hannifer, you're in this world alone. You are going through this alone. There's nobody else that is feeling this pain like you. So how did, I don't know how to ask this question, but I guess, how did those pervasive thoughts, I guess, hold, like have a grip on you to the point where it was like, okay, I need to go to this hospital. I need to check myself in.
Yeah. Well, first I want to say thank you for sharing that, because that's not easy. That's, I mean, it's just not easy to share something so deep and just the vulnerability. I appreciate you feeling comfortable enough in this space to share that with me. And just in relation to your question, I think even as a young kid, it's something I'm working on right now in therapy, that when people always tell me, like, I cannot believe you're 23. Like, I just, mm-hmm. I cannot believe that you're 23 years old. And I understand 100% why people say that and why people think that. And I think that as a kid, when life was rough and we were looking through the couch cushions for enough money to like get a taxi to school, I always thought about the future. I was like, one day it will not be like this. One day I will have money. One day I will be able to do all these things. And it was never for me, like, I want to buy Gucci and Chanel. Like, it was mm-hmm. always like, I just want to be comfortable. I want to go on vacation. I want to take a taxi if I need to. I just want to be comfortable. And I would always think about, okay, so I was never like, oh, I'm going to be a ballerina. Like, I was always very, very, very like, analytical about the choices that I would, of like, when they ask you what you want to be. So like, I wanted to be a lawyer. Then I wanted to be like a stage designer, or I wanted to be a choreographer. Like, I didn't want to actually be a dancer. I didn't want them to pick me, but I wanted to like have my own dance studio and have something that was consistent. Like, I was also, even in those big dreams that kids have before they realize, like, you know, I'm not even a good dancer like that. Before that would happen for me, I always thought about it from a way of like, but I also want to be stable. But I also want to be comfortable. And I know that like, you could be rich and poor real quick. So like, I don't care about being rich. I just want to be comfortable. I want to be able to pay my mortgage with no problem. I want to be able to go out to dinner with no problem. Like, I just want that level of comfort. And I want to be able to say yes to my kids when they ask for a toy in the store. Mm-hmm. And I want to be able to say no for a reason that's not, I don't have enough money. Right? Like, it was, that was always kind of how I thought. So I think that it's a blessing and a curse now, because I always think about like, how is this choice that I make right now, whether it's financial or otherwise, how is it going to affect the person that I want to be, the goal of being comfortable? Mm-hmm. And I had posted on my story not too long ago about like thinking about who I wanted to be as a kid and seeing so much of that now. So like, now if I want to go out to eat, like, I can go out to eat. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, I might be a little bit over the budget, but like, I'm all right. Like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I can pay my rent every month and I'm not scared. Like, what's going to happen. I can take my dog to the vet if something bad happens. Like, I'm comfortable in that way because of choices that I made. Right. Mm-hmm. And because of support and resources, and like, I can't take that out of it at all. But to answer your question, I think that like the pervasive thoughts were just the consistent fixation on the future mm-hmm. and the fixation on like, the way I'm feeling right now, I'm never not going to feel this way, because I don't know if you ever get over the trauma. I don't know if I'll ever get over these things. Like, am I ever going to be able to feel comfortable? So like right now I'm comfortable, but I'm like, no, I still want to make more money. I still want to do these other things. I still need to build this empire that I'm building. Like, I need to do more so that I'm even more comfortable, you mm-hmm. know? And so I think my pervasive thoughts are not inherently negative. They're just fixated, and they're not focused on what we just talked about. We're not focused enough on like, you're all right right now. I'm not acknowledging the fact that like, I am okay right now. That mm-hmm. most 23-year-olds still live at home with their parents, that most 23-year-olds still need financial support from their parents. And there's no problem with that. There's no issue with that. But I am lucky enough to say that I don't. Like, mm-hmm. if I want to go on vacation, I can go on vacation. If I like, and I have to be grateful for that. And I don't think I have a lack of gratitude, but I think that those pervasive thoughts that I'm not good enough, or that this is still not the future that I wanted to have when I'm in my room sad as a kid, mm-hmm. Those thoughts are like, well, if you're not there yet, like you said, 18, you were going to take all your siblings and take care of them, and you're still not doing it at 23. So mm-hmm. it was like whirling around all of these things that like, well, yeah, because when you were six, you didn't know how much it cost to have a 5-bedroom house. Like, you know, so it is getting comfortable with the fact that like everything that we talked about in the last little portion of like, I am enough. I'm okay. Like, I'm good. And you are living into what you wanted to be when you were younger. And now mm-hmm. you just have to implement those upgrades. But until you are okay with where you are, those upgrades are going to be harder and harder to get to.
Mm-hmm. And that point is just me too. How you said your pervasive thoughts were negative. It was just a fixation on something, on a goal that you have for yourself. That is a very important point, I think, too. And whilst, you know, I'm not a medical mental health professional as yet, catch me next 3 years. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. Catch me next 3 years with my credentials. I really think those pervasive thoughts, as you said, it does not have to necessarily be negative. It can just be something that you're hoping to happen and having a fixation on that thing that then controls how you see your everyday life. I think that's what it could be too. And I think people listening to this should also understand and ask themselves that question. Like, what is your pervasive thoughts, and is your pervasive thoughts tied to your goals? Because what I was listening to a podcast to, I don't know if anybody knows, but Sa Simone, I love him. I think it's pronounced him. He's from Brazil. He's this mental health advocate who uses sassy spirituality. He had a podcast where he was saying, oh my God, the point just left my mind. What the heck? Wow. Okay. So it's on my pervasive thoughts. I don't know. Why did I bring up Sa Simone?
Come back. It's going to come back.
It's going to come back. Yeah. I know he was talking about thoughts. Oh my word. I think he was like having a podcast where he was like asking us how, or to like pay attention to our thoughts. Mm-hmm. And the thoughts that come into our minds. I think that's what we also need to do, is to pay attention to the thoughts that are crossing past our minds, and asking ourselves if it is, okay, I got it now. Okay, so he was saying, yes, he was saying about thoughts. So he was also asking us the question, what do you do when you're happy and when you're sad? Is the thing that you're doing when you're happy also equal to the thing that you're happy when you're sad? And understanding that those differences between celebrating when you're sad and celebrating when you're happy. And I think it comes into play here, because our pervasive thoughts, is it something that comes from us being happy that leads us to controlling our present day? Or is it pervasive thoughts that are leading us to be sad that is also controlling our present day? Because I think when people think we're having happy thoughts, it's like happy thoughts full stop. But are you fixating on those happy thoughts? Do you want those happy thoughts to come true right now? You know, that's where I think the problem comes in, when it's like, I want it and I want it right now.
Yeah,
you know, that unhealthy fixation with those happy thoughts. And I never thought about that, because I think for me too, I'm a person that wants the things that I want in life right now. So I want to open a business. I want to have a private practice. I want to have these things. And I'm so fixated on it to the point where it's just like, I need to get it done. But hearing you say that can also be a part of what can control us right now. Yes, 100%. Yes. And that also leads me to the point that you were saying about truthfully grieving. I've never heard anybody say those words, because for me, with my trauma, I don't think I truthfully grieved what was happening. So how did you get to that point of understanding that you need to truthfully grieve what was occurring in your past and even to present day as well?
Yeah. So I mean, kind of even get, I'm gonna let y'all gonna learn everything about me today. but like, as a kid, I was a victim of sexual trauma, right? And so the person was someone who was very, very close to our family, someone who I was left alone with countless times someone who there was a very trusting relationship with them. And so I, to this day, have not been able to unpack that experience. Mm-hmm. I think it was something that I just kind of like bottled up and was like, yep, I don't want to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And so it never like correlated to me of like, why are you always with older men? Like, why mm-hmm. are you always kind of needing to have some semblance of control in your sexual relationships? Why are you slow to say what you want, but quick to say what you don't want? Mm-hmm. So there's so many things that kind of you start to begin to learn about yourself when people ask you questions, when you hear someone else talk about it. And I think that's a beautiful thing about social media and about kind of all the people who are connecting in the online space, because you hear someone else talk about their experience and you're like, oh my God, like that's why I do that, or that, or other people do this too. Mm-hmm. So I think like truthfully grieving for me is the realization that I'm not going to be able to stop exhibiting certain behaviors in my life mm-hmm. And in my relationships if I don't grieve and I'm honest with myself about that, right? I think that a big reason why I didn't want, and this is the first time like openly saying this to anyone except for my therapist, mm-hmm. But it's hard for me, like the sexual violence started happening when I was 4. Mm-hmm. So there was no... it's one of my first memories. There was no separation of like, this is a bad thing. This is just something that you do. Mm-hmm. And so even growing up with that, and for as long as it happened, which was about 7 years, it was going on, I would initiate this relationship thinking that it was normal, right? And so even like saying that out loud is so scary.
I understand.
It's scary because I didn't want to deal with the problem because I thought that how could he be wrong mm-hmm. if I initiated it, or if I had moments where I wanted to do this thing, or where it felt good and where there was that connection. And that's a whole nother podcast episode, right? Mm-hmm. But in talking about sexual trauma, particularly in childhood, we don't unpack the reality that it affects. Like, I have friends who are like, I didn't touch myself. I still have never done it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I was doing it. I was 6. Mm. And that's only because I was introduced to this thing way earlier than I should ever have been introduced to it. And now I'm being asked as an adult to like have a healthy sexual relationship with people, mm-hmm. like without that ever having been something that we're told to just say no, just say no. Mm-hmm. In school, they don't tell. And then I live with a single dad. Was I going to go ask him about like, how do I talk to men about like, mm-hmm. And my grandma is a Jehovah's Witness where like, if you're not married, sex doesn't happen. So you just, you don't have someone to just be like, and then you have your friends who are learning from porn and who are learning from like all. And so we're all just sitting here, like we have no idea what's going on. And that's regardless of having the trauma, sexual trauma or not. So I bring that story up because that's the most pervasive way that I've realized that like, one, with my mom, I need to grieve the fact that like some of my siblings, the way that they're grieving is like talking about her like she was incredible. Mm-hmm. And remembering the really good times and like focusing and fixating on that, which is something that is natural when someone passes away.
Yes.
For me, I'm still stuck because I was still angry. And now I don't have, I never have the opportunity for her to apologize. I never have the opportunity for her to say, I want to do better. I want to grow. I want to do all these things. Cause I mean, she's gone. Right. And so I think like, even in that, like the truthful grieving comes in for me of we have to be honest about the trauma in order to overcome it. So I couldn't actually grieve my mom because I was trying to fit up with all my siblings being, oh, she was great. And remember when we did this and remember when we did that. And I think that that's mm-hmm. an important part of grief too. But I also had to come to terms with like, I'm still angry. And I'm guilty for still being angry. And when it comes to my sexual trauma or my childhood growing up, poor, growing up in a dysfunctional household, growing up moving around a lot, I have to grieve the fact that like you didn't have a childhood. You didn't get to just be a kid. And you never are gonna have that opportunity. I don't get to just be a kid now that I'm an adult and I have bills and I am a dog mom and I have all these, like I'm responsible. I have responsibilities. I have a business. I gotta do my taxes. Like there are things that you have to do and you have to grieve the fact that you weren't a child and then move on from there and say, well, when and how can I live into who I wanted to be as a kid, as an adult? Mm-hmm. And how do I do that in my everyday life? And you have to come to terms with that. And I'm not there. Like I'm not there. I'm talking to my friends now. I'm like, I really want a hobby. I don't know what it's going to be, but like, I want one. Mm-hmm. I want to have like those childlike things that just bring me joy because I do them. Mm-hmm. But I'm very good at like, if I'm only doing things that have a purpose. And unfortunately we don't think of I'm doing things that have a purpose. If it feels good for you, it does have a purpose. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to make you money or like hit a deadline or do all of these other things. So I think like the truthful grieving, I went to a whole bunch of places there, but they were for me, they were all really important to like answer the question because we have to be honest with the reality of what we experienced in order to grieve. In order to heal from it, you have to be real about it. And I am starting to realize that I can't be ashamed of things that I wasn't in control of. Mm-hmm. And so I'm getting closer to there by having conversations like this, by opening up on my Instagram a way that I never did before, by like just being authentically myself and not apologizing for it. Cause I think holding it all in, well, that wasn't working. So now I'm just going. Yeah.
Let it out. No, but wow. So you said a lot that resonated to the point where I started to think about my own like trauma and the things that I've been holding on to. And I've realized it's a lot. There's a lot that people don't know that I've been through. I'm not like quite comfortable as yet to talk about it because I have a very big memory loss. So if you were supposed to ask me like what happened when I was younger, I couldn't even tell you, to the point where I know an acquaintance of mine, he messaged me and he's like, Hannah, I'm so sorry for how I treated you when we were like in secondary school. And I was like, how did you treat me? Because I don't remember. That's how bad it was. And he was like, oh, you don't remember what I did X, Y, and Z. I said, wow, for real? And I was like, okay. So like one of the biggest things that I can think about right now that happened when I was younger, I was just like you know, my dad left. He was the sole breadwinner. My mom didn't have a job at that time. So we were basically poor. We had no money. We relied heavily on my dad to give us money. And one day it was just like, we had to rely on my mom's cousin to feed us. So she would like give us food every week. Wow, thinking about that, it's gonna make me cry. But yeah, we relied heavily on her to feed us. If it wasn't for her, and I'm so grateful for her, and I don't say that to her a lot, but I'm so grateful that she took time to like cook for my mom and I. Wow, yeah, I'm gonna cry. So it was like me not saying those things for so long. It's coming back now, and I think it's true, like you have to truthfully grieve those things, because if you don't truthfully grieve those things, you're kind of going to end up like me. It's just going to like keep on going down and down. You're going to suffocate it. You're going to just press it down until one day you're just going to explode. And I have exploded before, you know. You can ask my dad, I've exploded countless of times because I have not been truthful with myself and the traumas that I've been through. Yeah. And sometimes it comes with shame too. Like saying that out loud, I'm just like, damn, a lot of people are going to be like, Hannah feels like that. You know, it's just like, it comes with a level of shame that I have not built resilience for. So why am I going to say it out loud? Because then people are going to have this preconceived notion about me. So yes, 100% truthfully grieving to yourself and actually acknowledging the traumas. Because now when I think about like food and my relationship with food, I clean my plates. There's nothing called leave food behind. There's nothing called be ungrateful for food. I even with money too, I have triggers around money. Like these are things that I'm now starting to be okay with thinking about. Before I used to be like, oh, why am I forcing myself to eat? Hanifa, you're forcing yourself to eat because you have this conception that food might never come again. You know, why you have triggers around money? Because you're scared that money's going to leave. You have this deficit mindset around money. And like being truthful about these things now is helped me kind of navigate my life and understanding why I behave a certain way. So I definitely think, yes, truthfully grieving and truthfully being okay with talking about your traumas too, it leads you to understand why you're acting a certain way in this present day. So yeah, that point, ooh, it touched my heart. Yeah, wow. That's like something I never really thought, like, yeah.
Yeah, and we're going through it, and like, and that it's just like something that I think about often when I think about feeling ashamed and feeling like people are going to perceive me differently when they hear this thing, because I hate feeling pitied.
Yes. Hate it. Yes.
Something that I think about is that nobody pities Jay-Z.
Mm.
Nobody pities Jay-Z. And if you look at what Jay-Z's been through and the life that he's lived for him to be where he is, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. But his trauma directly correlates to where he is and his success. Without that, there wouldn't have been this.
Mm.
And that is what I have to continue to remind myself as I feel more and more comfortable sharing, as I feel more and more comfortable connecting with folks on our different levels of trauma. I think it is necessary to realize that many of the people who we revere as successful had to go through extreme traumas and extreme lows in order to get there. And the people who I hold up as people who I think I want to mimic in some ways or another are usually the people who've been through trauma and who have overcome that in order to use it to be successful, rather than those people who just like, I'm successful because my parents were successful, because mm-hmm. And that's no shame to them and no shade to them. You were born into what you were born into. But mm-hmm. when you can be someone who truly, truly makes lemonade from lemons, that's a success story to me.
Mm-hmm.
Not when you were given the lemonade stand, the lemonade mix, the water, and we're told all you had to do was put makeup on and show up. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, listen, you got to come to terms with that for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people out here who are coming from nothing, from overcoming their issues with money, overcoming their issues with food, overcoming and still having to do so with more money in the bank than I will probably ever see.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing it just like we're doing it. They have been where we have been, which means that there is a pathway there, even though it's this skinny.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to, people like us, what we are destined to do is to clear out that path to make the path more accessible to folks. Like, it's not about me making my way through the tiny path. It's about clearing the path more and more and taking more and more of the obstructions away for people to begin to understand that. Because think about how many, like even my students, how many of them don't understand that their relationships with money are a direct correlation from living in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand that. And so on a community level, we don't understand that. So how do we expect individuals to? Mm-hmm. And I think that like giving and realizing that takes off some of the pressure, right? So I don't ever want you to think that like you can't share or you can't be your authentic self because you're worried about how someone else is going to perceive it, particularly when that someone else was when you go to these PWIs, a silver spoon in the mouth.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And was, oh, I got here and oh yeah, my parents are paying for this, so that's why I can go to the bar every weekend, because I got, like, we have to be really real about not comparing ourselves to stories that are just not even on the same planet, let alone playing field.
Oh, ooh, yes. Ooh, I think we should like dive in a little more about shame. Mm-hmm. Because shame does not discriminate. Shame does not care if you're Black, if you're white, if you're rich, if you're poor, if you are Christian, if you're Buddhist, it does not care. Shame comes when shame wants to come, and shame goes when you build shame resilience towards that shame that it, you know, shines light on. So I guess for me, I wouldn't say I have shame resilience at all. I know what it is, and I know like some of these steps to get there. Shout out to Brené Brown, because she has a book all around shame. Love it. Love her. But taking those things that people have written and implementing it into my life, it's harder said than done, you know, because they give a very like point A, point B, point C kind of thing. But then when you look into life and you try to put those points to your life, you're just like, hold up, what? Like, isn't that even fitting, you know? So how did you, because I think for you to ask for help, you also had to somehow step over that barrier of shame So how did you step over that barrier of shame to actually tell your therapist, hey, I need some help, and tell your dad also, hey, I need some help?
I think for me, holding on to the shame and letting the shame run my life could have resulted in me not being here. And so I think that my deep commitment to what I want to be and who I want to be allowed me to push shame to the side, because it was more important to take care of myself. I think that's really the only way to put it. I think that, like, unfortunately, my life story is trauma, and it is a lot of craziness, and it is going to make a fantastic book.
I'm ready. My coins are ready.
But it doesn't mean that I'm void of shame, because I definitely have things that I carry shame for. But I think that that's one of the paths toward healing that I've started a little bit, that I'm a little bit ahead on, that like the reality is I can't change what I've been through. I can't. There's genuinely nothing that I can do about it. So I can hold shame about ways that I behaved and things that I've done, and have regrets around being able to do things better and be the upgraded version of myself, wishing that I had been that upgraded version in other scenarios. So there are people out there that don't like me because I've said something rude, and like, I might not apologize right now because I'm not going to make all y'all think that I'm sorry, because I might not. But I definitely know that there's ways that I have treated people that were unfair because I hadn't dealt with my own shame, my own issues in life. But I do realize that holding shame will be my demise if I don't step more onto the side of caring more about taking care of me than caring about holding on to shame.
Did you have like steps that helped you put that shame aside? If it's like telling yourself exactly what you just said, or if it was just like maybe a visualization process that you had?
I think for me it was journaling. Journaling really has helped me access a lot about myself, because when I journal, it's like I'll start off with what I know I wanted to talk about, and then somehow I'm like all the way in the trenches of like my childhood and story that I didn't remember until that very moment. So I think journaling really has allowed me to access that. I've done a lot of guided journals, I have a gratitude journal, I have a happiness journal, I have one that's just plain and regular. I have like all different types of journals that I write different things in. I'm a very visual person. I love stationery. So like making sure that I get a book that looks like this, because it's joy to look at it, which means I'm more likely to write in it. I'm more likely to finish it. Doing like very small things that bring me joy, going to Barnes and Nobles once a month to like buy new stationery that I don't need. That's none of your business. I do what works to make me actually get in touch with the thing. And I think that the more that I have shared my story, the more that I've had people connect with that story. And that's also helped me void some of the shame, because I know so many people and I have talked about these things so much and had someone on the other end be like, wow, I went through that too. Or wow, I felt that too. Or no, I've never felt that in my life, but I can see how the way that this happened for you in your life connects to how this happened for me and mine. And I've been able to kind of begin to void that shame and shed some of it off, because I have, one, been truthful with it, with myself, in my own journal, in my own things that nobody else can read. But then when I am coming onto a platform like this, or I am in spaces where I'm having these conversations with people, I'm able to say to them, hey, like, let's have this conversation, or let's dig deep on this, or let's get into this, right? And I've always had positive feedback. I've had maybe some situations where people are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry you went through that. Mm-hmm. Wow, how could that, mm-hmm. Like, I've had those. Mm-hmm. And those are definitely things that you kind of have to navigate and figure out how you're going to respond, so that one, you don't take out the fact that you hate pity on someone who really just wanted to be nice. Mm-hmm. And also how to help them better navigate this sort of conversation when they have it with someone else, because someone might not mm-hmm. be where I am and able to knock this out because of something that's going on within me. It's not mm-hmm. about you. Yeah, I think I would tell other folks who are really dealing with the shame to write about it, to talk about it, to find safe people, like, be all up in my DMs at XEvaJC. Like, I will talk to you, because I want to be able to, like, connecting with people is the joy of my life. Mm-hmm. So, like, every time I meet another incredible human being, I'm just like, this is what we're supposed to be here for. And so making those connections, finding groups, finding just places that allow you to have this conversation. I think those are the first steps.
Mm, and definitely, like, pushing through as well. I think for me, what I've realized, when shame comes up, it tends to, like, silence me to the point where it's like, I don't even know how to effectively communicate with the person who just, maybe sometimes they don't know that they just shamed me, but kind of like pushing through and not letting myself fixate on that point that they just said that did bring me shame. And also understanding, as you said, where your shame comes from. So for me, some of my shame can come from my insecurities about my body. Some can come from my lack of knowledge of certain topics. Like, these are things that I know for myself that would bring me shame. So when I step into conversations that sometimes I know where the conversation is going, or I might not know where the conversation is going, I already have those shame, I don't want to say call it resilience, but that shame knowledge, that if this topic was supposed to come, and you know that voice in our head that, like, perpetuates those negative thoughts. So when that conversation comes up and that voice is ready to, like, ramble, I'm just like, no, this person may not know that they have just brought shame to me. So let's not fixate on this right now. Let's have that conversation and then go back in our own space and then think it through. Sometimes I might fixate on it a little longer than I need to, but it's good for me to, like, sit down with it and be like, okay, why did that just bring you shame? Why did you feel this way? What are you going to do next about it? You know, so just kind of being truthful with yourself, because I think it took me a long time to realize that I had shame around body image, and also around like lack of my knowledge, because, you know, like, we're expected to be happy all the time, you know, social media, like, all these things. But then, you know, you sit down with yourself and just like, oh wow, no, like, I really do have this issue that I need to see about. So it all comes back to truthfulness, to be very honest with you, and self-advocacy too, because if you're, like, talking to someone and maybe a shame topic has arrived, or, like, something that brings you shame is coming out of that conversation, you can be like, can we stop this for just, like, a moment, so I can, you know, get myself together, or just ask politely for the conversation to end, or something that protects you. And that's another thing too, protecting yourself. You know, you said it before, like, not caring about other people, it goes deeper than just, like, not caring about other people. It goes into, okay, this is something that's shameful, that is bringing shame for me, let's exit that. You know, like, just, like, taking ourselves out of these environments that cause us pain, you know, especially as Black women, you know, there's so much shame that comes every single day that we have to endure. Sometimes you might not even have a break to just, like, stop and talk about it, but we have to make those spaces to talk about it, because if we don't, once again, we're going to implode, and we do not want to implode. So, you know, having those safe spaces.
Yeah. And I think something that helped me with that literally a couple weeks ago. So my glasses broke a couple weeks ago. Quick anecdote. And I had to tape them up for the week because I couldn't go to get my glasses until Friday or get my new glasses until Friday. And something I realized is that people really don't be looking at you like that. And people really don't be paying attention to you like that. And that's not to say that you ain't bad as a mo, but there are people, like, people on a day-to-day have so much other stuff that's going on in their heads that they are usually not paying as close attention to us and how we move and what we do as we think. And then you have to think about how you behave. Like, how quickly do you scroll through people's stories? How quickly do you like skip through what someone was saying on their Instagram page? How quickly do you kind of glance at somebody and pay no attention? And so the whole week I had this tape in my glasses and I'm insecure the whole week about how people are going to perceive me or what people are going to say about why can't this girl get some new glasses? And in almost every meeting I was in, I brought it up before they brought it up. And then when I brought it up before they brought it up, they were like, I didn't even notice. And so I think that helped me realize too, that it's okay to come up and show up as your authentic self, because the people who are very meant to hear it and hear you, because listening and hearing are different. When people really hear you, it is much easier for you to speak your truth when there are people who actually want to hear you. So the people who want to hear you are going to hear you. And the people who are just listening are going, it's going to go out one ear and out the other anyway. So I think that's an important way to start to shed shame too. And when you're feeling it in those moments, that people really aren't about the life of listening, engaging, and making people feel good. And so when you are sharing, the people who really want the best for you are the ones who are going to be listening. And those people are less likely to bring shame upon you anyway.
That was a whole gem. Oh my gosh. That right there. That was a gem. And I hope people, like, if you didn't listen, just go back again and listen to it again, because that was a gem. That right there. Thank you for that, because I needed to hear that as well. So yeah, thank you. There's one other thing that I really want to talk about, to kind of like give people more insight into what it's like checking yourself in, because I also think there's shame and fear that comes with checking yourself in. Like, there's this show, I really cannot remember what it's called, but there's multiple plethora of shows that kind of show you that that whole process, and they make it look all glamorous, they make it look easy, they make it look like it's a walk in the park, but I think people need to actually hear a lived experience. So if you are comfortable sharing it, of course, do you mind like kind of giving people your experience of how that was?
So the beautiful thing was that it wasn't a scary process. I mean, I went with my dad. You go to the regular emergency room and you kind of tell them that you had been referred by your therapist and that you want to check yourself in or just want to talk to a psychiatrist, because you don't necessarily have to check yourself in. You can talk to a psychiatrist depending on what time you get there, and you can leave. It also depends on what the psychiatrist, after talking to you and doing all the health screening questions, what they think makes the most sense. So I was in the emergency room for maybe like 3 or 4 hours. So that was rough. It was a really busy night. And so they obviously, the psychiatrists, there's less of them in the hospital in general than there are doctors and nurses and things of that nature. It definitely like didn't feel like the nurses were any more sensitive to the issue than they would be if I came like with my arm chopped off. Like, it seemed very routine. Why are you here? Oh, okay, this is why you're here. Well, they ask you the questions like, do you have these thoughts? Do you have a plan? What was your plan if you had one? Like those sorts of questions, but still at least in my experience, was still a kind of callous manner. And then I was just kind of in a bed in the emergency room, kind of waiting to be seen. Maybe an hour after I got there, the psychiatrist was able to come talk to me. He made his suggestion that I did stay. And asked me how I felt about staying. And I said, I mean, I just kind of don't want to be here for that long, but I know that I want to speak to someone. And he said, like, well, the psychiatrist that's there and can actually prescribe medicine, they have to kind of observe you on it and things like that. So they would rather, as it being something that's just now entering your system, that you stay. And so my dad was kind of just like, if they think it's a good idea, you stay, you take the time, you rest. And so then you kind of just wait in the behavior health unit of the emergency room until they have a bed ready for you in the actual behavior health kind of wing of the hospital. You go in, they kind of do a full body check and make sure that you're not bringing in anything that could harm you. They take away kind of all of your clothes and your phone, and like all of your stuff kind of gets removed from you. And then on a day to day, they have, at least the hospital that I was in had like programming of different group sessions and conversations. They kind of tell you the rules. Because of COVID, you get tested for COVID and all of that before you go in. Some people chose not to wear their masks. I was not about that life. And so it was just kind of like a day to day. You feel kind of like wonky because you're on medication you've never been on before. You're kind of just getting used to the space. And like I said, I mean, most behavioral health wings at the hospital doesn't have like, or I can't say most because I don't know, but at least the hospital that I was in, they don't have like, this area is for people who are dealing with this issue and this area is for people who are dealing with this one. So I was in a all gender unit, and there were just people who were severely sick with more obscure kind of mental disorders like schizophrenia and severe bipolar disorder and things of that nature. And so it was just kind of like finding my place there, finding who made sense to talk to. And I talked to the therapists and the nurses, and it was just kind of like, it was a process. It definitely wasn't easy, but the actual checking in process wasn't hard. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't glamorous. Like it definitely wasn't something that was like, oh, I'm just gonna have this pretty room where I'm looking at the stars. I really didn't appreciate the fact that like, there's nothing on the walls. Like you just kind of like, there's no art, there's no mm-hmm. color. It's just kind of gray and dreary. And then also the weather was terrible while I was there. So it was just like looking out into gray gloominess. Mm-hmm. But it gave me the time to just like reflect on what does 3 days look like without your phone? What does 3 days look like without your computer? What does 3 days look like kind of just taking yourself out of what your normal day to day would look and feel like? Mm-hmm. And I'm appreciative and thankful for the doctors and the nurses that took care of me while I was there. Definitely not something I want to do again, but I would advocate for anyone who is at a moment where they really just, even if you just don't feel like you know what to do with the thoughts, go and see someone and go and talk to someone, because it's better to be, like I till this day do not believe I would have done anything. I don't believe I would have made an attempt. I don't believe I would have made a plan. But I do think that having those pervasive thoughts over days is where I realized that it was important to make that step, because you never know. You could get another call that takes you from mm-hmm. where you are to even lower. And then next thing you know, you do have a plan, and you don't want to let that kind of be the end of you. You gotta reach out and help and ask for the help when you need it. And even if it's not from a mental health professional at first, like even if it's just texting a friend and being honest, or texting a family member and being honest, obviously someone who you trust, but someone who you can help bring you through the process together.
Mm-hmm. And that's very important too. That support too. Yeah. And making sure that you have like, because I know for me, this is, I did an episode with my friend. We talk about kind of like loneliness and how there's like perceived loneliness and then loneliness, and how sometimes you perceive loneliness is what gets us and like what traps us, because we think people aren't there for us. Mm-hmm. But understanding that there are people who are willing and want to listen to what you have to say. Cause even for me too, it takes me a long time to bring my problems to people, because I always think to myself, well, they have their own problems to deal with. Why are they going to sit and listen to me? Like, I remember, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, I messaged my cousin because my thoughts were just, it was attacking me, you know, it was like coming from all different directions. And I messaged her, and this took like 2 hours for me to actually build up the courage to message her. And at that point, when I was building up the courage, I was thinking, oh my gosh, who else can I message just in case she doesn't respond to me? Mm-hmm. And then I thought to myself, well, I don't want to like bring anybody else's mood down. I don't want to do these things. But when I was talking to my friend about it after the whole incident happened, she was like, Hannifer, you have to understand that we are here for you. Like, no matter if it's good or bad, we want to listen to what you have to say. And that took a very long time to like drill in my head, but to understand that there are people who are around you who want to listen to what you have to say and are willing to take these steps to go through everything that you have to say. And it's not just like a pass by kind of conversation. It's like, let's dig a little more, you know? Yeah. Let's talk about this point a little more. Like, you're emphasizing this point. Let's, you know, let's do that. And to hear people actually say that to me, it was just like, okay, what, you know, it gives me comfort to know that I can go to people. So you're just understanding that the people who are around you want to hear what you have to say, yeah. You know? So
even further than that, think we always worry, okay, if I bring it up now, it's going to bring their mood down. Well, think about what happens to them if you're gone.
Yeah.
Cause that's not, you didn't just bring their mood down. We will be taking a, and not to put blame on the person with the suicidal ideation or the person who is successful in that act, but it's to say that when we tell ourselves that we don't want to bring someone's mood down, and we tell ourselves that we don't want to mess with someone's day, you mess with their life when you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would rather have this conversation, even if it's the best day of the week. It's going to make me feel good to know that at least I was someone who you felt comfortable enough to come to me and tell me that this is what you're going through in this moment, and I could be a part of helping you get to a better space. Mm-hmm. I think that that's how we think about it as people who truly care about someone else. And I think that that's how we start. Like, if you have friends that are telling you that you're going through some real stuff and they're like, you're just negative, like you're just being, that's when you know that that person isn't your friend. Because for me, in those moments where I have a friend reach out to me and tell me there's something going on, I'm not feeling it, like this just happened in my life, it never brings my mood down. It has me like, okay, well, who do I need to be, or what do I need to do to support you in this moment? And I think that that's really, really important. And I have seen very clearly who's in my corner through this space. The people who it was easy to tell, the people who it was easy to talk to about it after, the people who kind of understand that when I go through things like this, I do have to figure out how to share it in some way, whether it be on social media or a platform like this or not. But it's always because I'm thinking about how it's like, I think about why I volunteered so much when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I used to always volunteer on Thanksgiving and holidays. I used to always volunteer when I was in high school. It was just something that, and then even in college, like for the first 2 years of college, I was volunteering very consistently. And I think about why that is, and it brings me back to how you start to feel better. It's really hard to hate yourself when you're in service of other people.
Yeah.
Really, really, really hard. Like, to at the same time be like, you suck, you're a terrible person, when you're out here like making lunches and giving beautiful notes to people who are without homes. And so I think that that's something too, to like really get into, well, what is the thing that I'm passionate about? And even if I can't start the nonprofit tomorrow, I can be a part of someone else's.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can go and there are millions and millions of opportunities in every part of the world to support other people. And as long as you're coming from it with a, I want to support, not that I want to save, it's going to be really, 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 really hard for you to hate yourself and to continue to have those pervasive thoughts. Because I need you here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd rather you come text me, DM me, tell me like something's going on, than have it be on the other side that I'm hearing like this happened or like she's going through this. So I think it's important for us who struggle with suicidal ideation to think about that as well. Cause I think that's one of the key factors of why people begin to make that plan and begin to make the attempt, because they truly feel like they are a burden to people. But when people show you that you're not, it's easier for you to begin to believe it.
Mm. Oh yes. And that point that you made about actually knowing who your friends are, let me just tell you, the pandemic really, the pandemic was like, let me just shine some light on fake ones, you know? And I'm so happy that it happened, because I was really going about this life just watering these friendships that really didn't care about me as a person and like what I was going through. Just really very being truthful of who your friends are and understanding it's okay to, I don't want to say break those friendships, but just kind of like step back, you know. It's okay to step back and do what's best for you. And if people call it
No, it's okay to say, like, this is a girl I only party with. Like, that's okay.
That's okay, too. Yeah. And shifting your the language between friend and acquaintance. People need to stop calling me your friend if I'm not your friend. Just say acquaintance. I'm not going to feel a certain now.
If you wouldn't give me a kidney, if I wouldn't give you a kidney, you're not my friend. That's genuinely how I feel. If I undergo surgery for you, you're not my friend. And I don't say that to be rude. I say that to be real. If you're somebody who I consider a friend, that means I consider you a part of my family. I consider you who I'm here for. So if that meant, we need to go get a bone marrow transplant. Like, yes, I'm okay. Where do I sign up? That's what I do for a friend. And so I think that it's important for all of us, because that language is used so loosely, to really sit down and say, oh, what does a friend mean to me? What does a support system mean to me? Even in our romantic relationships, what does it mean for my romantic partner to care for me or to be here for me? And when they're not living into that, are they receptive of that? Or do they listen to you when you say, oh, wait, this is what I need in this moment? Mm-hmm. Are they clear with what they need and how that's going to work in your relationship in general? Like, it is so important for us to realize and understand where the relationships in our lives lie, mm-hmm. and what they mean and how the other person feels about them. Like, I have friends who I don't talk to every day, who I don't talk to every month. But if you need something, you know I'm going to answer the phone. You know I'm going to be there for you. You know that, like, there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know that. So, like, I might not be the best. I am not. If you need a friend that's like a day-to-day texter and with you all the time, I'm sorry.
Yeah, me too.
That's not me. But you know that it's serious and you need something, I'm there.
I'll be there.
What's up? So it's definitely like really integral to understand and put your friends into categories for yourself, so that you're not letting yourself down when you reach out to the person and they don't do what you need them to do. Mm-hmm. Because then you're mad at them when you really should be mad at you.
Ooh.
And that's not blaming a victim. That's just saying we have to be real with ourselves sometimes. We have to say, oh no, if I really needed somebody right now, that was the wrong person to call. So I played myself.
Yes. Big time.
We need to realize that we really need to figure out how we stop playing ourselves. That is how we begin to get on that path of healing, because then I know that if I pick up the phone and I call Erin Wessel, that she is going to call me back, or she's going to text me and be like, today was rough. I didn't have the capacity to talk right now. I hope you're good. Let me know if it was something serious and I'm gonna call you. Mm-hmm. Because one, she has strong boundaries for herself, and also understands that, like, that is my friend. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm going to make sure she's good before I say, like, I need this moment. Right. And so I think it's really important for us to have those friends and for people to understand, like, it. Like, I had, like, Daniela, the girl who brought us together. Right.
No, I was just thinking about her. That's so crazy.
We don't talk every day. We don't talk every week. We don't talk every month sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But Daniela, no, like, then we have a conversation. It's like time never passed.
Yeah.
Because she knows what it is, and I know what it is. She doesn't need no recognition, no best friend.
My friend.
She don't need that.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what it is. Mm-hmm. And when you have a true friend, you realize that they know what it is. They know, like, I have friends that if they were 6 hours away by car and I was like, I need you, they're getting in the car and they're coming.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have those people, we got to figure out what community organizations you need to get involved in, what social organizations you need to get involved in to find them. Because we are social beings. We cannot be on this earth, like, self-isolating. I'm the queen of it. Queen of it.
Me too.
Queen of it.
Me too.
I'm with myself. Leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I know, okay, I want to be alone. Let me go be alone with someone else so that I'm not by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But that's when I start to feel lonely. That's when I start to be mad at my friends for not being there for me when I didn't tell them to be there for me.
Mm.
Like, there's so much to it. And so there is that internal responsibility, that external responsibility, that all has to come into play in order to kind of get over the hump. And that's why it feels so good to start to feel better, so close to when you felt bad, because then you start to recognize, oh, this is what was going on. This is what I wasn't reaching out for. These are the people who I wasn't reaching out to when I know I should have. These are the person phone calls that I was ignoring because they were really going to tell me that you need to go and do something for yourself, because they can recognize that you're not good. So you're ignoring their calls because you just want to be by yourself and do what you want to do. It really is rough. It's rough out here.
It is
rough out here. And we have to be like truly conscious and aware that like sometimes we self-sabotage. And we have to start to recognize when that happens so that it's easier to end it. Like, This whole thing, like, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
But you can't let it being a lot stop you from figuring it out, because that's how we lose people we love.
Oh, yes. I was just, honestly, when you brought up Danielle's name, Daniela, I was just thinking about it. I was like, wow, I was so thankful that you brought us together, because this right here, I don't know if you feel the same way, but it feels like it's supposed to happen. And I'm so happy that it is happening. So Daniela, if you're listening to this, thank you, girl. Thank you, girl. We love you. We love you. I mean, y'all should also go and look at her Tarot by Dani page, because she be giving me the that information that I need. So y'all need to check out her page. So to like wrap it up, do you think there's anything that you would want to say to someone who may be going through the same thing as you, who may be scared to admit that they need help, to be scared to tell the loved ones around them that they need help?
Yeah. I mean, take the first step. Reach out to one of us. Find an Instagrammer that doesn't make you feel like they're faking it. Find a YouTube page that makes you feel better. Like, buy a new journal, get a nice pen. Like, it's such small things that we don't understand can be the catalyst for such incredible things. For me, like, sometimes I just need a sharp, nice pencil. Like, I'm very fidgety. Y'all, anyone who's watching the video, I'm fidgety. I'm moving my hair. I'm moving my hands. I'm touching stuff. Like, I'm very fidgety, and that's how my anxiety kind of just comes out. And so and anxiety is not always a bad thing, but just that's how it kind of, I have to move and figure those small things out for yourself. Do you like to color pictures? Do you like to write everything down? Do you like to have pretty stationery? How do you like to organize your days? Just start to ask yourself those questions. And like I said, take the step you don't have to go to a mental health professional first. Now you come to me, I am going to advocate for you to go to a mental health professional, and you and I can sit on Psychology Today and find one for you together. Because I can't help you through some of the things that I just don't know how to do, that I am not trained to do. But find people who genuinely care about other people and hold tight to them, because that's the reason I'm here. In all those moments in my life where I have felt like I'm so low that I just want it to be over, I have always found a reason to continue to be here. And it's because I'm thankful to have incredible people in my life. And there are too many people on this planet for us to say that you'll never find anybody, particularly with the connection of the internet and all of these things. And I'm not saying making friends is gonna make it better and make it go away, but I'm saying finding people who can support you socially, emotionally, psychologically, physically, spiritually, like finding those people that fill those buckets and that make that feel good for you, and finding the things that do that as well is the only way for you to have an uptick, and the only way to know if it's possible to feel better, which it always is. So I think that's all I have to say, that like, I don't know you, but I love you because you exist. And so as long as you ain't out here trying to harm people for just shits and giggles, I love you. And regardless of whether we have had run-ins and I'm not, and we weren't friends and blah, 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 again, I don't have to know you. And the reality is that a lot of the people who we fight with or argue with or don't have relationships with anymore are because we didn't know them, and either they didn't care enough to really know us, or I didn't care enough to really know them. And that's what really causes relationships to fail. And so stepping into new relationships and new things in your life are the only way to make the new thing happen, and the new way of being and the new way of feeling happen. And so I hope all the best for you. And my DMs are wide, wide open.
Wow, thank you for that. And same to my DM, be open as well. And I'm going to link your Instagram and your Black on Black Education Instagram as well, because I think a lot of people need to see the fantastic work that you are doing to, I would say, reform education, because that's definitely needed, especially in Black spaces as well. Yeah, and I know you'll be putting that work, sis. I know. So I'm definitely going to be posting that below. And yeah, wow. I definitely think there needs to be like a part two or something to this, because yeah, there's more that I feel as though I want to delve into. But thank you so, so much for taking time out of your Saturday to talk to me and trusting me to like be the person who you talk about this very vulnerable topic about. Sometimes it's very hard for me to see the progress that I'm making with my podcast, and especially like the impact that it's making. But when you came to me, I was just like, wow, I'm doing it. You know, I'm doing the thing that I always wanted to do. So you don't understand how like validating that was for you to actually trust me and to like trust me with your story as well. It really makes me feel like I'm doing the thing that I always wanted to do. So thank you.
You are. I'm grateful. And thank you all for listening.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.